Welcome to Career Tools. Today's topic, attending a meeting for your boss. Today we talk about Career Tools recommendations for how to attend a meeting when your boss asks you to go in his or her place. Here we go. Okay. My boss asked me to go to a meeting.
Right.
Habitually, what I've done...
It's a good thing. It actually is a good thing.
It's a good thing. Yeah. Right. The fact that he even trusts me to go to a meeting. But habitually, what I do is I just say, okay, boss, and walk out the door and show up at the meeting. And you know what? It didn't go too well.
Yeah.
You have any other suggestions?
Yeah. Maybe? You kind of have three options here. The first one is you can ask a million questions. Well, okay. You're not going to ask a million questions. So really, you have two options. You can do what most directs do, which is... go, what you did, right? And then wait for the boss to ask for a debrief and wonder why it doesn't go so well.
Yeah.
Right? And does the boss ever teach us how to do it afterwards? No. Right? Does the boss ever think it's my job to teach them? No. Right? He or she just doesn't. Or
It's my boss's fault.
Yeah, exactly. Right? And to a degree, you almost have to argue. There's a case to be made. Yeah, it is. I mean... it's a chicken and the egg thing, right? Who's responsible for the direct's performance? The boss is, right? So look, you can do a couple of simple things. They take about 5 minutes, at least before. You got to do some things during and some things afterwards, and you can impress the stuffing out of your boss. And here's what they are. We've got three basic points. Number one, before you go, there are three questions you have to ask your boss, okay? Or three areas you've got to address with your boss. Again, no more than 3 or 4 or 5 minutes, right? Number two, during the meeting, you've got to stay quiet and you got to take good notes. Actually, let me go back and say regarding the three questions. You've got to ask your boss, am I presenting? And if you are, you've got to find out how am I presenting. It may just be reporting.
That'd be good to know.
Yeah. It may just be reporting or maybe more than that, although usually bosses don't ask you to go if they're presenting, right? You've got to ask about key agenda items, things, topics that are hot in terms of the agenda. And then the third part is topics or discussions to watch out for, those things that have risk for the boss's organization or for the boss. And that has to be separate from the key agenda items because you have to ask bosses about risk to get them to think about it that way, we found. Okay. Then again, number two, during the meeting, you got to stay quiet and you've got to take good notes. Most of us take poor notes. We take notes that work for us, but if we take notes for other people, it doesn't go well, and you've got to stay quiet. And if you think being in a meeting is a plus, and so therefore you should speak up and be your boss, you're smoking crack. Let's not do that. And number three, after the meeting, we recommend you report efficiently. You've got to capture and send your notes from where the meeting was right away. You don't send minutes. You've got to think about how your boss wants to receive your communications about the meeting, and we'll talk about that. You've got to include in your notes the meeting attendees and non-attendees, right? Boss asks who was there and who wasn't. You're like, well, I don't know. Boss is like, well, you know nothing. Right. And then lastly, of course, a simple thing, but just to be clear, you've got to highlight the deliverables that your organization, your boss and or you and anybody else in your boss's organization got coming out of the meeting. Pretty simple.
Good.
That's a high-level overview.
Excellent. Okay, so before you go, you got to ask, you said three questions, right? In an ideal world, you're going to have time to ask your boss some questions before you go to the meeting.
Right.
If you have time and you don't ask your boss these questions, you're frankly going to be thought of as overconfident and underprepared, to say the least, neither of which is particularly professionally flattering.
Yeah, so. I think what people do, don't you think, that people assume that not asking questions is somehow seen as you being totally ready. You're sharp. You're up on the politics. You can handle it.
But your boss is smart enough to know that if this is not a meeting you go to regularly, then she knows you don't know what's going on.
So exactly.
Who are you fooling?
Right. So when you assume that you can handle it and your boss knows you cannot, right, the assumption that everybody makes about, well, he's asked me to go, so therefore he or she must assume that I can go, is a completely wrong-headed assumption, and that's why we have recommended questions to ask.
So what are the questions?
Okay, so the first one is, as we mentioned, am I presenting? And if so, how? Look, obviously you need to know if you're going to have a speaking part in some way. You know, as I said, you know, usually you can safely assume you're not going to be taking over an important presentation that your boss has been working on or preparing for, right? The bosses generally don't delegate that much. But look, you could be asked to give a standard weekly report, right, in a round robin part of a meeting, if the and your boss's staff meeting, for instance, which, by the way, we would recommend to managers, right? If there were manager tools cast, we'd say bring one of your directs with you a couple of times, and then Absolutely. Have them go in your stead and recognize that there's risk and brief them for it in advance, right? There could be an update on a project or a task status that you've got. It could be a budget update. Generally, delegated presentations that your boss would normally give are routine presentations, or put differently, what your boss would normally give that he or she would feel comfortable delegating to you are going to be fairly routine presentations, and they're going to follow some sort of pattern.
Like some operational update production statistics or whatever.
Yeah, what's going on this week, or what are your three highlights or lowlights or whatever. Standard stuff. Frankly, your boss would rather do it himself. And is going to hope, simply, that some of his other peers don't take advantage of your junior status. But he's going to know that it's possible, particularly from any peers or from, or anyone else with whom he isn't on cordial terms. So it does happen. And so, look, if you get time for questions, you've got to ask, am I presenting in any way? And look, there are bosses who are so busy they don't think about the meeting from anybody else's perspective. If the presentation you're delivering is routine, simply follow your boss's guidance on how to present. Now, to be fair, make a note to familiarize yourself with not only the data you're presenting, but any previous presentations of similar data. If it's a weekly report, ask him for previous weekly reports so you won't be without some sort of context going into the meeting.
It's possible you may actually get a question while you're presenting, right?
Yeah.
If you don't have a little bit more details, you're not going to
be able to handle. That's what people do. They think they can master what their boss told them to say, and they completely forget that if they were presenting, they would prepare for the presentation and they would be thinking about questions. But people just get out of their depth, and it's all, we believe it's all because of that assumption that they think they can do it, right? And bosses don't come down and say every single thing that happened in the meeting last week. They don't give you context. Some do, but very few do. And so people walk in and they're hosts. They start out the meeting with all the wrong assumptions, and the boss's lack of interest in preparing them, which we'll talk about in just a minute, works with that assumption to create danger, Will Robinson. Danger. Right. So look, there's no way you can predict that question you asked. What do you do if you get questions, right? But the general rule is you ought to be able to answer any clarifying question that someone asks. That means understanding not only what you're presenting, but also where it comes from and what the underlying data mean. That it's going to require you to study, and likely, folks, obviously, study more than your boss says you have to.
Yeah, that's where a lot of folks go wrong, right?
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Our boss says it's going to be routine, right? That's what she means. That's what she says, and she means it. We take that to mean it will be routine for us, when what she actually means is it would be routine for her.
Right.
Right? So we're basically caught with our pants down. We're representing our boss in front of her peers and, sadly, likely, in front of her boss as well. So it's not routine for us. It'll take extra work for us. There's no shame in admitting if you go to a meeting for your boss, you're going to have to study more than your boss would because your boss is conversant in this stuff and you're not.
Yeah, your boss is conversant in this stuff. You're not. You're going to study. You're going to get as good as you can. But the fact of the matter is you're probably not going to have it all. You're not going to be as good as your boss.
Right.
So what happens when you get that question? You don't know the answer to.
Yeah. If you get a question that goes deeper or sounds beyond your scope, or maybe you just get a radar flicker that says, this question is designed to get me to answer truthfully so that I will say something out loud that I would prefer not to say. And folks, if that goes over your head, sorry, that's politics. If you get a question that goes deeper, sounds beyond your scope, the right answer is to punt. And I'm sorry, for our international audience, that means don't try to force anything. Don't overstate. Back off. Back down. Don't try to address the concern or the hidden thrust, right? What you do is you say, I'm sorry, I'll have to get back to you on that. And in 90%+ of these situations, you'll be giving a pass because you're a delegate and everybody understands that. It's almost nice in those situations that your boss's boss will be there, because then some peer won't get to have you know, a free lunch on you by taking it out on you. It would be, you know, if there are four peers in a room and your boss would have been A and there's B, C, and D in the room and you're representing A, if B attacks you because their boss, A, B, and C, A, B, C, and D's boss is not in the room, if B attacks you, C and D have to be somewhat unethical not to defend you, right? If you're right. representing your boss. And yet, it happens, right? Depends on who B is, right? And who C and D are. Yeah, you just have to say, I'm sorry, I have to get back on that.
Yeah, much better than
winging it.
Oh, yeah. And then you're in real trouble. So let's talk about the key agenda items, because this is a trap that a lot of folks fall into, because bosses are famous for sending delegates into meetings, seeing it from their own perspective, right? They see it as routine. They talk about it, right? We talked about it above. And this catches a lot of folks.
Yeah.
We get very little guidance about what's important, what's not. They tell us things like, yeah, it's no big deal. We just need a representative there. It's routine.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. It's a standard meeting. Nothing ever really important happens. Yeah. Well, yeah. Right. Until something happens,
right? Right? That's the whole, look, if nothing ever happened, I don't need to be there, right? You'll just miss the meeting. And look, the point we made earlier, right? What the boss is describing in being routine is true from their perspective. Folks, whether you want to admit it or not, whether you believe in flat organizations or you've been told you're in a flat organization, poppycock, the fact is that our boss is exposed to ideas and issues and political relationships that we aren't exposed to. Doesn't mean he or she is inherently better at them than we are. It means that when it comes to many things in working in life, having some prior knowledge and having some experience about it makes it easier to deal with those emergent situations. Essentially, if we're attending a meeting for our boss, one we rarely attend, the entire meeting, and certainly the touchy moments, are emergent situations for us. That which is routine for our boss will be an emergent situation for us. And emergent situations tend to punish a lack of preparation or a lack of foreknowledge, right? So what we have to do is find out what we can from our boss. Now, look, folks, we're not stupid. We know at Manager Tools that your boss may blow you off, right? Ah, you can handle it. You can handle it. And then you know it's routine for him. He says it's routine, and you can't get through. And he says, look, I'm delegating to you because I know you can do it. You'll do it, right? And he's probably not even thinking of that 5% chance where it all goes to hell in a handbasket. The fact is, it could happen. But look, just because you think that's going to happen doesn't mean it's wrong to ask for some guidance, right? So we ask, we try to find out what we can. Ideally, we show the agenda to our boss if we can get it, or we ask him or her for it if they've got it. If it's a standing meeting, they've probably got the agenda already. If we've got the time, we ask them to find an old one if there's not one around, right? And look, again, we're not saying he'll have one or he'll want to look for one, but far too many of us are afraid to ask for fear we're going to be perceived as needing our hand held. And folks, that's not right. If you know there's never an agenda in your firm, okay, that's one thing, right? But don't not ask because you're afraid of being thought needing too much help, because you're going to be appreciative of that help if, in fact, you do need it. Fortune favors the prepared. What is it Brantricki said? Luck is the residue of design. If you want to be lucky in the meeting, prepare for it in advance. And then you have to ask after that. You say, okay, look, what typically happens in the meeting? What are the key points I need to be prepared for?
And that kind of leads us to the next question we have to ask, which is
the danger areas, right?
The danger areas, right? What are the topic or discussions that you need to watch out for, right? Yeah. The zingers that, you know, your boss hopefully has some idea.
I learned this in the hard way, because what happened was I would ask. I got sent to a lot of meetings, and it was part of my development. I was being developed. I didn't really know it. I had a good boss for a while that developed people by giving them work, and that's the real power in developing people. And what happened was I didn't ask this. I asked about the agenda, and I got stuff about the agenda, but I didn't get stuff about the hidden areas. Like, well, this is not an agenda topic, but everybody knows the big item right now is Project X. Well, it's not covered on this agenda here. This group doesn't talk about it. But 20% of every meeting is Project X, because it sucks all the budget out of the room, right? And so it could very well be a key point and not be an agenda item, right? And most bosses, if you ask about the agenda, they're going to talk about that. But you need to ask them separately about the potholes and landmines that they're dealing with. And they'll just, it's amazing when you ask this question. When you ask these two questions, we're going to recommend how often they go, oh, let me tell you about this that's going on, or let me tell you about that what's going on. So you'll have some context, right?
You weren't
going
to share that with me before?
I'm sorry, did I not ask the secret code question in the right way? Yeah, exactly. So don't just ask for the key points. It leaves out what amounts to the low points in the meeting, right? And there are two questions we recommend everyone ask. The first is, what topics present risk for us? Right? And this is a question about topics. And yeah, you could ask a little bit differently than that. We're not suggesting those exact word. But again, the point is topics. We're asking our boss, look at the agenda, identify any areas in his org, which of course is our org, at least in part, is at risk in some way based on the agenda or topics that are going to be discussed. Maybe it's a delay on a project, it's low productivity, it's weak responses to scheduling changes, over budget, late budget plan, whatever. Don't assume your boss doesn't have any risk when he or she goes into meetings with other people, right?
Right. The second question is the more interesting one, though, because at least probably half of our audience, not all the, but half of our audience routinely probably misses this completely. And that's, what about the people in the room who are going to present risk, right?
Yeah.
Not just the topics.
Yeah. Right? Who are our enemies, please, right? Which one do we need to be careful of when they pause, right? If we're smart, we're going to ask, is there anyone I need to be prepared for who may not be aligned with us? That word aligned, not being aligned, is a benign way of smoking out any possible enemies your boss may have or any friction you might be prepared to address with other people.
Yeah, we know what that word really means.
Yeah.
We want to keep our clean tag on
IT. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's right.
We found out the hard way, again, that it's better to ask about both topics and people. Look, you know, and maybe this appears a little bit cynical, but what's that old saying that just because I'm paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get me?
Right.
Same way. Just because it's cynical here doesn't mean it's unwise. Those non-aligned peers of your boss are more likely to take advantage of you than they are of your boss. Right? We're not going to respond as fast. We may have less than full information to defend a change or defend our position, or for that matter, it's not our position, it's our boss's position. We may not be comfortable appealing to our boss's boss without any relationship with him or her. And so if somebody wants to be a little bit less than professional rather than giving us the benefit of the doubt, they attack us a little bit. So we need to know that's coming. And if you know person B is your enemy, you're going to give them 30% less of an answer than you would anybody else. You're going to meet the minimum standard for an answer, but you're not going to elaborate, right? You're not going to try to be helpful and then run the risk that you will have essentially then suggested a deliverable that you don't intend to suggest, right? That's the problem. People talk, they get excited, and they talk, including me, right? They talk, and then all of a sudden, they create a deliverable for themselves.
They've committed to something like,
yeah.
You get back, your boss goes, what?
I got an email that said you said what? Yeah.
Kidding me?
And you thought you were just being helpful.
Right? Yeah, helpful.
Helpful.
Yeah. To somebody.
Not so much.
Not to your boss. Okay, so I kind of push back on our next point a little bit because now I'm finally getting a chance. My boss has asked me to go to a meeting with his boss. She's an important person. I want to impress her. And now you're telling me I get to go to the meeting and I basically got to shut up, stay quiet, and simply take good notes. I mean, come on, here's my opportunity.
Right. Every couple of weeks we do a cast where I say to myself, we should really switch roles and I should be the one that gets to ask this, right? Because you're the one that everybody would believe is going to be smart and quiet and take good notes and be politically holding fire to make sure that you dot your I's and cross your T's. Where I'm going to walk into the meeting and say, hey, the boss says I'm here, so I have the boss's imprimatur, so I'm just going to go,
So let's be really honest here. It's a lot easier to write these casts than it is to live them, right? Is that really the message here?
Look, I mean, obviously these casts aren't about us. They're about what we know is effective, but that doesn't mean we haven't lived them, right?
Yeah.
And one of the weaknesses here, look, I'm really good at getting prepared for the meeting because I've been in enough meetings. I know how to get prepared. And I've learned the hard way to stay quiet, right? I'm the guy who would be like, okay, let me impress my boss's boss. So look, yeah, our primary responsibility is to represent our boss, but we can't be our boss. And so it's more effective not to try to be our boss without extensive preparation, without really what amounts to even intimate knowledge of things. And it may just be, you may be lucky that your area of expertise is the one being discussed in the meeting, but that's pretty rare. All right. We ought to be mostly seen and not heard in a meeting where we're representing our boss, right? Particularly if it's a big meeting where,
right.
God, if there's 25 people in the room, it's a waste of time to speak up, right? Which is why, by the way, folks, don't have meetings with 25 people, right? So stay quiet. Don't offer a lot. If you get a question, answer the question and leave it at that. Don't engage a great deal. Now, that's not to say you can't go around and shake hands. Let's go back to our first cast, how to solution to a stalled technical career. How many of you are technical managers or technical individual contributors right now that don't go to a meeting a couple minutes early and meet everybody else in the room, right? Nothing wrong with doing that. Hi, I'm Mark Horseman. I'm filling in for my boss, Mike Ozan.
Right.
But now you're Mark. I've not met you before. Nice to meet you.
Right? But now's not the time to right every wrong in the organization now that you have a voice at the table,
yeah.
Right?
And as a mentor of mine once told me, Mark, you have a phrase you use sometimes when you meet people. You say, oh, you're the guy. Yeah. That unless you're talking to someone who knows he's your boss's best friend, oh, you're the guy, is not a good introductory comment, right? Yeah. So, look, folks, you just can't know enough to do as well as your boss would do. And your boss is probably not dominating the meeting they're delegating you to go to anyway, right? Sure, respond to requests for information. Certainly do whatever presenting or reporting is required, right, that your boss asked you to do or told you about. But other than that, keep a low profile, okay? If we're asked about something that we're not very well versed in, as we alluded to before, the best approach is to avoid definitive comment and promise an answer to whomever needs the information quickly after the meeting, all right? We may want to appear knowledgeable, but we may be creating a deliverable without even knowing about it, and we don't want to do that. So what we do is we say, hey, I'll have to get back to you, or sorry, but I don't have that. I'll check with my boss and get right back to you.
And then you basically make sure that Joe asked a question, you make sure you get Joe the answer and everybody else around the table answer as well, right?
Another mistake that I, in fact, have made, and this is classic sort of politics 101. No, you don't promise an answer to everyone. Even though in the meeting, everybody would have heard it. If Joe asks a question, Joe gets the answer. If the meeting leader wants me to share with everybody, then of course, right, she'll say that and then I'll do it. But if Joe asks the question, my response goes to Joe, to the requester only. Or the other option is that the boss says to you, hey, look, I saw in your notes that Joe asked X and you owe Joe an answer. Go ahead and send that out to everybody. They need to know that as well. But otherwise, it just goes to Joe.
What's the danger of Joe asking the question and then me just without any being bidden by my boss or anybody else sending it out to everybody? What's the issue with that?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, you don't know that your boss would do that, right? You're acting for your boss, right? And you can't be certain that your boss would have had the information, maybe likely, but you don't know what your boss would do with it. Because you're not giving the information in the meeting, and so nobody's getting it in the meeting, right? You have an opportunity, because of the delay, to ask yourself, okay, what's the best thing to do? If, in fact, you send it out to everybody, you run the risk of a deliverable or a lack of certainty or new information or information being perceived by other people in a way that's not helpful to you or to your boss. And you have to be conservative. Now, I know there's some people who are listening who are going, well, you know, but you would have said it in a meeting if you knew it, right? Well, yeah, that's true. And you're not your boss. And if you were your boss, you would know. And there's the possibility that the only person he wants to know is Joe. And so he would say, look, let me get back to you later. How many times have you been in a meeting? Okay, let me ask you, how many times have you been in a meeting and you had the answer and you did not say the answer? You said, you know what? Let me get that to you later.
Who, me?
Yeah.
Never. I would never do that.
And people come up to you afterwards and goes, I can't believe you didn't know that. And you look at them and go, well, of course I knew it, but right. I didn't feel like everybody else had to know it. And there was a political risk for me or an operational risk or an organizational risk, even worse. And the one person who needed it, I was going to give it to. And sometimes you get questions that are not necessarily germane to the meeting, but everybody's sitting around listening. I don't have to share.
Yeah. So I think you're absolutely right that this goes back to the point of it's not your meeting. It's not the meeting you normally go to. You don't have all the background. You don't know the people. You don't know the topics. You don't know the issues that are out there, or at least you don't know it completely. And so there's some risk associated with giving too much information without having all that kind of background. So this is really one of not trying to be less helpful, but one of just trying to reduce risk of this of this email that you send out just taking on a life of its own and all of a sudden becoming the topic for the next week.
In fact, the way you say it makes me think it's pretty clearly a case of value versus risk here, right? And this cast says reduce your risk.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what we're saying. And what most people do is they have an assumption, they have some mistaken assumptions, and they see it as politically or career-wise a value to get exposure. And so they go for the value equation rather than the risk reduction equation. Yeah. And so all of our recommendations are about risk reduction. And we don't, and now look, if you can achieve value, great. But you can, but we don't recommend you trade an ounce of risk for an ounce of value. You don't trade any risk. If you can achieve value with no increase in risk, okay, fine. But you've got to keep risk to an absolute minimum. That's what this cast is about.
Yeah, and just understand, again, you don't have the background necessarily to be a good judge of what that risk is.
Yeah, exactly. At this point. Yeah. And look, you know, don't feel bad that we say we're not casting aspersions on our audience. We got, you know, 10,000 to 20,000 or 50,000 listeners every week, right? We've been there. We know what it's like to have an opportunity and to think, God, how could I go wrong with this? And then have it go wrong. So take it from us. Don't do what we did.
Yeah, exactly. The next thing you got to do is you got to take really good notes.
Yeah, I got to tell you, this is a pet peeve of mine. I've got a lot of reasons why. I'll share them in a second. I'm amazed at the people who think that their note taking is good and they can't tell a week later what their notes say.
Right.
I'm amazed by it. Look, I tell people all the time, I'm not a great driver, right? Everybody thinks they're an above average driver. Well, not everybody's an above average driver, folks. Half of the people in the world aren't. At least those who drive. And I know what I'm good at and what I'm not good at. And it's amazing how many people think they're really good note takers. And I don't see good note taking behavior in terms of a week later, can somebody refer to their notes? I said, well, just check your notes. What do your notes say? You can't really tell. Oh, okay. So you don't have a note about something that's really important, relevant to me and you, right? So there are three reasons why we say you've got to take really good notes. And they are bad habits, lack of knowledge, and lack of context. From a bad habit perspective, almost none of us go to meetings and take good notes ourselves. That's my point. We don't have to because we're there in the meeting. Our notes are for us. And frankly, most of us have gotten bad at taking notes. And so the idea of taking good notes is a bridge too far for most people, right? Your habitual note-taking, folks, those behaviors will not serve you well when you have to go to a meeting for your boss. You're going to take less notes than you need to take, and it's going to be about the wrong stuff, too, because of the other points about context and knowledge. Our lack of knowledge about various topics means we won't be able to keep up with things. And without reminding ourselves to overdo note-taking, we'll take normal notes but then miss tons of stuff we don't understand. And you put those two things together with a total lack of context, things like, why is he saying that? Or what role does he play in this discussion? Or who is running this related project and why isn't it being brought up? Because clearly it's a 900-pound gorilla. If you don't know that stuff, right, you can't understand what's noteworthy and what's not. If you don't have that stuff, you're destined to take poor notes unless you work very, very hard at it. And that's why we elevate it and hit you right in the nose and say, don't walk in thinking you're a good note taker. You're probably not. And that's doubly important. It's doubly important you take really, really good notes and you've got to overdo it just to meet a minimum standard.
I've seen in the past, and this thing that's concerned me, where folks have gone to a meeting for me, for example, they come back and they have their notes. They're not so much notes as they are characterizations of what happened, right? So they said, Joe was angry.
Yeah.
Okay, so Joe was angry about this project.
You and I were supposed to say, what did Joe say?
What did Joe say? What made you think, did he say that led you to believe he was angry? Oh, I can't recall. I just know he was angry. Yeah.
One of the things we talk about at the Effective Communications Conference is the problem with people's communication styles, right? DISC is one way to characterize people's communication styles, is we apply our own behavioral filters to other people's behaviors, right? So he sees Joe, who he doesn't even know, and puts his own filter on top of Joe and assumes that, therefore, the only reason I would do that is because I would be angry. So therefore, if Joe is doing it, Joe is angry, which is completely false, unless Joe just happens to be just like the direct, right?
And then I go to Joe, and Joe says, I wasn't angry. I was just getting clear on what the deliverables were.
Yeah.
We were messing around in terms of a date, and I said, how about we have it by January 15th at 3 o'clock, period.
Yeah.
And period. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe that period is what made him think I'd
Well, think about, again, at the Effective Communications Conference, we do email practice, right? Hey, take a look at the email you got, right? And there's an email. One of the email practice sessions we have is, we missed the revenue deadline or we missed the budget planning deadline. I need to plan for when we're going to fix it. And you ask the room, how many of you think this person who wrote this email is mad, right? And like half of the people raise their hand, oh, he's mad. Two-sentence email. No. Not mad at all. Just being factual, just being clear, might be a high D, but right, just being a factual kind of guy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So take the, so the point here is we take notes, you know, write what was said, what happened. Don't just simply write down a bunch of characterizations, because your boss is smart. She's going to ask you, like, what did Joe say?
Right, yeah. You've got to write enough that you can overcome your lack of context and your lack of foreknowledge, because you're going to be relying on the detail of your notes and you're going to be asked questions by your boss, particularly if something goes wrong. The better your notes are, the better your report is going to be to the boss.
Exactly. Okay. Now, we've gone to the meeting, we've taken notes, we've done all this. Now, after the meeting, we got to report efficiently, right?
Right, yeah.
At some point, our boss is going to want to know what happened.
Yeah, exactly. And we need to do it fast, because bosses would normally get it at the meeting. They're done at the meeting, right? They know everything happened when the meeting ends at the meeting.
Right, attending. And your boss's boss kind of expects your boss to act as if he or she were
exactly
at the meeting.
Right? Everybody else, right? It's not like, oh, you had a delegate there, so we'll give you a few extra days to catch up.
Right.
No, not so much. I mean, I don't know why I wouldn't do that.
We'd be delegating a lot more meetings.
Yeah. You want to send a delegate? That's fine, but we ain't cutting you no slack, Bubba. All right, so look. Some simple stuff. Look, you've got to capture and send your notes from where the meeting was. Don't go back to your office or cube. There are distractions at your office or at your cube, and your work in this meeting isn't done until you report to your boss on it. We've seen it happen before.
That is a great point, which bears repeating. Your work at this meeting isn't done until you report to your boss on it.
Yeah, because you're just attending the meeting. You're not your boss, right?
Right.
And so until the boss gets the report, the meeting ain't done, right? Yeah. You get back, you get busy, you get in trouble is what it boils down to. And look, folks, 1 to 2 to 3 hours later, your recall is plummeted. You not only had no context or no foreknowledge, but now you have no memory and you only have notes and we're not any good at notes. Do it now. Get it done. Stay in the meeting room if you possibly can, thanks to laptops nowadays, right? Or even your smartphone or whatever. Send your notes to the boss. You're not done until you send your notes to the boss.
Now, this next point is really going to surprise somebody. I had a discussion with a little bit on the discussion forums recently about taking meeting minutes using a laptop. And I think his statement was, I think he said, his meeting minutes were voluminous, I think was...
Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's the word he used.
Now, okay, so he takes notes in the meeting on his laptop.
Yeah, well, that was really the core of our discussion, which is not recommended. I mean, I personally understand, being a high C myself, I personally understand why you'd want to do that, but don't recommend it.
Yeah, it's not, it's just, it's efficient at the expense of effectiveness, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so look, to your point, some high C's, some engineers, some accountants, some software people, software developers, like to overdo the note-taking, turn it into a detailed description of everything that was said. Folks, those are meeting minutes, and we don't recommend professionals, unless you're in government or you're governed by Robert's Rules of Order, we don't recommend you take meeting minutes. You know, for as many boring meetings as we hear complaints about, it amazes us that anyone thinks reading minutes of them would actually occur, that somebody would actually read the detailed transcript, if you will, of what happened in a meeting, right? And by the way, a lot of tech organizations have started going to, you know, oh, Bob said this and Terry said this and, you know, this was captured. It's just like, it's dumb.
Yeah.
People won't use them. They don't work. And what that is I want an email trail of what actually happened.
Yeah, it's a COA.
And 25 years ago, there was no email and people trusted each other. So documentation doesn't increase trust. In fact, it decreases trust. The fact that you believe you eliminate your risk by reporting everything, folks, is overridden by your boss's reasonable assumption that you can figure out what's important, what's not important. And look, she doesn't have time to do both. So how would she have time to read your minutes if she doesn't have time to go to the meeting to begin with? So you've got to create good notes that are not minutes, that capture the key points with some detail around the key points.
Okay, and if you're high C and you have to take all those detailed minutes, then fine. Okay, fine. But
if you That's fair, it's perfect.
If that works for you, then by God, do it. And I'm just harking back to the discussion forum conversation. If you're going to do that, when you send your boss what happened at the meeting, you're going to have to create a different set of notes for your boss. You can't send him the voluminous set of notes, the minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, and related to that, our third point here is think about your boss's receiving style. Peter Drucker tells us, right, and we shared this in Managing Your Boss, our cast about managing upward, right? We said, don't manage your boss. In 2006, we said there are two types of boss communication styles, readers and listeners. And for you DISC knowledgeable folks, D's and I's tend to be listeners and S's and C's tend to be readers, right? If your boss is a reader, prepare and send your email notes first and then pop around and see if he has any questions. If he's a listener, prepare the notes, pop around and ask him if he wants an overview, and then follow up with the detailed notes you've already prepared. This happens after you've already prepared the notes. Okay, the notes are prepared. In fact, think of the notes as your preparation for your briefing with the boss that he will either get before or after he reads the notes.
But if I've already prepared them, why wouldn't I send them before I talk to him?
Because it's not about what you think or what you say. Communication is what the listener does, and in this case, the boss is the listener, right? Well, think about it. I mean, what's the classic manager tool story, right? Mike asked Mark, did you get the email? And I say, well, of course I got the email. And then he suddenly realizes and asks, did you read it? No, I didn't read it, because I'm not a reader, right? I'm a listener, right? Call me and tell me what you want me to know, and we'll chat about it for a minute. So if your boss is a listener and you send him something to read, he's not going to read it. You think you're done, and you're not done.
Yep.
Simple. And a boss who's a listener, who you get a briefing, you give him a briefing, and then you follow up with the detail, he's going to say, well, what about this, what about that? Oh, that's in my notes. And he's going to be like, okay, great. And then he'll read the notes with some understanding of what actually happened.
He needs that context.
He'll actually read it with context. He'll read it with value, right? If he gets it first, he's like, oh, I don't want to read these. I don't want to read meeting minutes. That's what I would say. I'm not reading some stupid meeting minutes. Yeah.
Include attendees and non-attendees. This is a different point than our point about somebody asks a question, Joe asks a question in the meeting, and responding to everybody unbidden. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about when you go back to your boss, you got to be able to relate to your boss. Who was there? Who wasn't there?
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah,
right?
In fact, the reason I wrote this cast when I did, I've had it sort of outlined for a long, long time, maybe 18 months or so, is because somebody came up to me after we mentioned this 6 months or so ago in a cast, and they said, when are you going to put out the note about how to attend a meeting for your boss? And I said, I don't know. We'll get around to it. We got thousands of casts to go. He says, hey, you got to tell me about the attendees and non-attendees thing. I said, well, it comes in this larger context. And so now here's your larger context. Yeah. Look, you have to let your boss know in your notes who was there and who wasn't. And as well, the third piece of that is the invitee list, right? Who's supposed to be there. If it's a standing meeting, your boss probably knows the invitees, right? The attendees, right? Your boss wants to know that in terms of context and politics. And there are many times you can't see what he or she can see in terms of why things may have gone the way they did. Now, look, it's okay to say to your boss, hey, everybody was there on the list except for Joe or Bob or Terry, right? Whomever wasn't there. That's fine. But you've got to include attendees and non-attendees. And look, if somebody was a delegate, somebody else was a delegate at the meeting, you have to let them know Robert sat in for Jane, right? Because your boss will consider that to be context. He may very well say after, if you don't include this, you're going to say, I keep expecting, where was James in all this? Why isn't James talking about this stuff? This is his baby. Oh, well, James wasn't there. And he looks and he goes, well, why wasn't James there? I don't know, right?
Yeah, want to know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it should be perfectly clear to everybody, but you know, we better cover it just in case. You got to highlight your deliverables to your boss. The last thing we've got to be sure to do in our notes at the meeting is highlight what our boss is responsible for or what we've agreed to. Whether they were assigned or we couldn't avoid them or everyone got them, or our boss has to know what they are and to whom they're due and by when.
Yeah, I mean, this is a simple case of what people do is they send minutes or notes and they think what it is a chronology, the meeting. And folks, if you think we're trying to suggest a chronology, you're wrong. It may, in fact, be chronological, but you've got to highlight deliverables. I promise you, you send stuff to executives, and executives want to know, what do I have to do? I ain't reading four pages to find out the thing at the very end, right? So look, particularly if you're a high D or high I boss, right? Put the stuff, here are the things that came out of the meeting you got to know about. But it's amazing the sense of, oh, there's a deliverable here and a deliverable here. It's like that 11-page email I got in paragraph 16, four sentences, there's a question for me to answer, right? I mean, folks, that's just not how executives and more seasoned managers respond. They want to know, distill it for me in some way. I want the detail, but I also want it distilled in some way. I want it easy for me to read. And what bosses have to be told is, what do they owe whom? And as Mike said, by when?
Yeah.
Simple.
That's pretty much how you view meetings, right? All it is a bunch of stuff happens in the end.
They're
I have stuff to do.
They're deliverables, right? Yeah, exactly. Can I go? Am I Teflon man? Can I go to the meeting and end up with nothing stuck to me? Right?
There you go.
Yeah. So, quick wrap up. Look, attending meetings for your boss is just another one of those things that we can do the way everybody else does, which is unthinking, unstrategic, unimpressive. Or we can take a few extra minutes and we can make a difference and an impression without trying to make an impression. And let's face it, the place person we want to make an impression on is our boss, not everybody else. Everybody's always talking about keeping their heads down and not doing extra work and not volunteering. But folks, going to meeting for your bosses, in most cases, is a definite political plus and likely career plus as well if you know what you're doing. If you don't know what you're doing, there's big risks, and that's why we wrote this cast. So remember, before you go, ask those three questions. Am I presenting, and what am I presenting on? What are the key agenda items? What topics or discussions do I need to watch out for? Where are the landmines? During the meeting, you've got to stay quiet. You've got to take good notes, better notes than you're normally used to. And after the meeting, be efficient in your reporting. Send your notes from where the meeting was. Don't send minutes. Please don't do that. Think about how your boss receives things. Is he or she a reader or a listener and deliver appropriately? Make sure you include a list of attendees and non-attendees. And obviously, you've got to highlight the deliverables because every boss goes to every meeting thinking, how can I avoid having stuff to do because I'm already busy? That's it.
Excellent. Thanks, my friend.
My pleasure, partner.
All righty. Thanks, everyone. That's it. Hope you enjoyed it. If you haven't been to the discussion forums lately, check it out. www.manager-tools.com/forums. Hope to see you there. So long, folks.